Well, I am really excited about this episode as I was able to interview a real comedian. Felipe Torres Medina is a comedy writer for Stephen Colbert on The Late Show. And I was able to talk to him about how to make something funny. Now, whether you are a professional comedian looking to get to the next level, or you are an amateur and just trying to give your significant other new material to listen to after 20 years of hearing the same joke, Felipe will give you tips on how to write something funny. Trust me, I took notes. One of the classes I teach is comedy in course, using humor to persuade. Humor can break down barriers, make you think. If you effectively use humor, it will make you more persuasive. I just read about how the great Chief Justice John Marshall of the U.S. Supreme Court was able to use humor to get the other justices to side with him on big cases. Abe Lincoln, Clarence Darrow, William Jennings Bryan all knew how to effectively use humor to persuade. But more importantly, it's just fun. We like to laugh, and we like to make others laugh. So if you want to learn more about using humor to make you more persuasive, check out our online classes at www.comedianoflaw.com. And today, we are going to get a glimpse on how to make something funny. We are going to get inside the mind of a funny man who is at the top of the comedic ladder, Felipe Torres Medina. In today's podcast, I have a special guest, Felipe Torres Medina, a professional joke writer living in New York City. He is a satirist, and he writes currently for The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. So, Felipe, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you live in New York City, and right now you are... How are you doing in New York City? How is one surviving? I am from the Midwest, so just paint a quick picture for me on how... What the world looks like from New York City.
You know, Joe, I think right now we were the epicenter of this like massive thing that has kind of taken over the world. And there's, I think, a grit and a resilience to New Yorkers where we're just like, oh, okay, well, I guess we'll do this one too.
Just kind of move on. What's next?
Yeah.
That is true. You guys are the epicenter of so much. I love visiting New York City just to eat the pizza, order a pizza by the slice. Just go to any hole in the wall place. My favorite is there on between 9th and 10th Avenue. I forget the name of it, but I had a court case up there. My client brought me to this little hole in the wall right across from a Holiday Inn Plaza Inn. And, oh my goodness, pizza by the slice, the pepperoni pizza, that is the way to live. Do you like the pizza by the slice?
Oh, I love it. New York pizza, this is a controversial opinion. There's like three places in the United States to get pizza.
Right.
And they are New York, New Haven, Connecticut, and Chicago.
Right, right.
So
what is your favorite?
New York. Although I do like New Haven. I think it's just... I think I'm very precious about my pizza opinions, New York pizza is incredible.
I am a pizza snob. No, I have not tried New Haven pizza. I have tried Chicago's, and yeah, it's good. I mean, the deep dish, you know.
It's its own thing, you know?
Comes with its own heart attack, resuscitation things. But in my opinion, I want to get that slice of pepperoni pizza. I want to fold it in half, tip it over, and have the grease just run off of it. Now, that is the definition of a good pizza.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
All right. Well, I wanted to have you on today to talk about how to write a joke, because that is what you do. That is your profession. You are a professional joke writer. All the rest of us, we just like to think we are funny. You actually get paid to be funny. Big difference. You are a professional. And so I want to know, how do you go about writing a joke? So first, let me just throw it out there to you. What is funny? What is humor?
Oh, man. Humor is, to me... Something as simple as truly a person slipping on a banana peel.
Right.
Because it is a delicate balance of subverting and responding to expectations.
Okay.
It's kind of the thing about the banana peel, right? You see a person walking close to a banana peel, and our social construct, our experiences with humor tell us that person is going to slip, right? So we build a lot of expectation around that. Now, if the person doesn't slip, there is a kind of, we feel a little let down, right?
Okay.
Because we are like, I mean in media, I don't mean a real person. But we feel a little let down because we're like, oh, I was expecting this to happen and it didn't happen. But if it does happen, it has to happen in a special way. Otherwise, it's like, oh, yeah, I called it, you know?
Right, yeah. That was unexpected. I expected him to slip and fall. I've seen plenty of cartoons on Saturday morning growing up. I knew the guy was going to fall. By the way, this is just a thought I had. You mentioned the banana peel slipping. Have you ever in your life ever seen a banana peel in the wild?
So here's the story. I actually slipped on a banana peel once in my life.
Okay.
Yes.
Right. So you speak from experience.
Yes. I was doing a summer at UCLA and... I was walking out of the dining hall and I wasn't looking and I slipped in a banana peel and I was like, this is insane. But see, that's the thing. There's that unexpected thing where you're like, there's no such thing as banana peels in the wild. That's something some humor writer came up with and then it happens and you do slip on it. So that was surprising and very funny. And painful.
Yes. Yeah. If I actually saw one and it actually happened in real life, I'm not just on TV, I would take note of that. That is a special occurrence in my life. I might not ever see this again. So I better cherish it while it lasts. So, all right. Well, Flippa, take us through the process. Let's say that you are going to do open mic night, a local comedy club. They mm-hmm. hear that, hey, you live around the corner. We have 5 minutes to fill here for our Friday night show. So you're going to write something special. How would you go about writing something intentionally for it to be funny?
You know, I think I always take from the personal. I think starting with what you feel is very important, whether it's you know, monologue joke, which is, you know, right, my day to day these days, or a joke for that I'm telling myself at a stand up set, or a joke that I'm writing in a humor piece. I think it starts from the things that you feel strongly about. You know,
okay, so you care about it, it interests you, you're fascinated by it. Mm-hmm. Now, is there any topic that's off limits, or is it just whatever interests you?
I mean, I don't think there's anything that's necessarily like off limits, as long as you're skillful and respectful and artful in the way you tell the joke, you know.
Obviously. But let me give you an example. I'm about ready to call up another person and interview them, and I'm going to interview them on the shooting in Minneapolis. I assume mm-hmm. you've heard about that. Mm-hmm. How does one go about making that funny? I am thinking I'm just going to avoid this like the plague. I, as far as being funny, I'm just going to do a straight-up serious talk about it because I don't even want to step in it, if you will, by trying to be disrespectful to what actually happened.
Oof, that phrasing. there's a source of funny. I think one of the things when you're dealing with things like this, things that are very sad, and I do this a lot in my comedy because I am an immigrant. You know, I come from Colombia. Okay. I moved to the States 5 years ago, and I have an artist visa. I am here in the best.
Wow, you really easiest. Are a professional. Your visa is based upon you being funny. Your paycheck is based upon you being funny. I got the right guy.
Well, it's technically called a visa for aliens of extraordinary ability. So,
wow.
So
I would carry that on my forehead. I would show that to everyone.
So, but you see, there is this absurdity in those things, right? In things that can be hard, like calling people aliens is insane.
Right, you know? Right, right.
And I think you know, obviously it gets a little bit more serious the more personal and sadder it is, you know, like the things that are happening in Minneapolis are a little bit more live, a little bit more I think more painful, because we got to see, well, you know, there was a death involved and we got to see images of that, and that is obviously a little bit harder than immigration, which is kind of a vague concept that everyone seems to have an opinion on. But, you know, there are a lot of sad things that happen related to immigration, things that are harder because you're an immigrant, just because of that. So I think what I do is, and this is something that they will teach you, any good comedian and any good comedy teacher will teach you this, is you have to punch up, you know?
Interesting.
Because...
What do you mean by that? Unpack that. I think I know what you're talking about. What do you mean by punching up?
So if I'm telling a joke about immigration, right? And I wanted to, for example, tell a joke about something very sad, family separations at the border and children being kept in cages.
Right.
Very grim topic, right?
Right.
It's very sad. So what I would say is, like, you know, they're putting those kids in cages, which is very weird, because usually the only person they put in a cage in the White House is Stephen Miller. Now, that's not a great joke.
All right. I liked it.
That's not a fantastic joke, because I just came up with it on the spot. But there is that element of, like, the subject, the target of my joke is not the children.
Right.
The target of my joke is not the person who is in a status below me. The person is, the target of my joke is the people who are above
me
and the audience.
Okay, it seems a little harmless there. You're punching up. You're going against Trump or some high official.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It can be anyone whose status is above you and the audiences. Because if you are punching down, if you're making fun of someone who is below you in a kind of, not in a, like, moral or, you know.
Right. I gotcha. In,
like, oh, these people are below me, but in kind of a status way, then you're bullying. Right. And then some people might laugh, but a lot of people might react with, like, well, that's kind of cruel.
Right. There is a sense of it being cruel. It's like, I don't think that's funny. I don't want to laugh. Mm-hmm. I've heard humor being defined as a benign violation. So,
exactly.
You know, you got to think, well, it's kind of harmless. So if you're punching up, it just seems a little bit less harmful.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think to talk about topics that are sad, then you find ways to punch up and to make jokes about the powerful rather than the powerless. You know, right now with COVID, there are over 100,000 deaths in the country. The jokes don't write themselves. I tell you that. I can promise you that.
Oh, that is a tough job. You have to write jokes on what's going on in the world. That's obviously going on in the world. People are actually dying and suffering. And how can we get a laugh out of this? This actually reminds me of a true story. I was asked to do this, one of my presentations for this bank. And they wanted me to talk on sexual harassment. And said, oh, and we know what you do. Can you make it funny? Who did I take off here? Why? Do you hate me? I mean, this is like going to be the death knell of my job. You know what? I was able to do it. I actually ended up following your advice by punching up. Do you know how I made it funny?
Mm-hmm.
I made fun of lawyers. Everyone likes to make fun of
everyone
lawyers.
Everyone likes to make fun of lawyers.
Game.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm not sure that's punching up, but nonetheless, how I got away with that.
There is an element with, like, lawyers have a little bit, because they represent people, because they become voices for others. Sometimes defending the guilty, sometimes defending the innocent, you know. There is an element that they are in a status above most normal people, because they understand the law, one would expect, better than everyone else, right?
Right.
So there is that
one
element.
One would hope.
Right. So there is that element of, like, well, they do have a lot of power in our society. So they are kind of fair game, I think.
Now, do you know Lori Kilpatrick? Did I say her name correctly?
I know of her. I don't know her personally.
She's a
writer for... Kilmartin.
Kilmartin, that's it. Yes. And so she did a recent comedy bit over her dad dying of cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
I'm familiar. And she was able to make that funny.
Yeah, yeah. She's she writes for Conan, right?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. She's I follow her on Twitter, and I think she follows me, and I think she's very funny.
Wow, I listened to that, and my dad died of cancer, and so I thought this is good stuff. This, well, yeah, obviously it's a horrible thing to go through, but just listening to her, you know, joke about it, you really resonate with it. You see yourself in that moment, like, yeah, that actually is quite funny, how she described it. All right, so you got this topic, and whatever interests you, what do you do next? Then you're writing a joke, trying to make something funny. What's the next thing you look for or do?
So I, and again, a lot of my humor comes from the immigrant experience or from the, and even if they're not about immigration or things like that, I do think I have a perception of this country and of things that people see and assume are normal, as an outsider, you know, because I obviously understand to a certain level American culture. I have assimilated. But I didn't have things as simple as, like, my school wasn't divided into, like, lower school, middle school, high school.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, I know of it because I watch movies and TV shows and things like that. But I don't, that wasn't part of my life. So there's an element to my comedy that is, like, finding those little things that people just take for granted in culture and in society. And that's what I gravitate toward. So I'm writing this joke, and I'm thinking, and this is a joke that I think about and talk about often is, people in Latin America are like, oh my God, you have to go to the States. That is the country of industry and technology and progress. And then you get here, and Americans are like, oh yeah, you know, this groundhog here tells us how cold it is.
Okay, I like that.
You know? Like, there's that tension.
So you're looking at all the idiotic things that we do as a country that really kind of undermines this idea that we are an industrious, advanced nation.
It's not necessarily idiotic either, you know. It's just idiosyncrasies, you know. And I don't think they're necessarily bad. You know, I just think it's hilarious. The groundhog idea is, I have no attack. I'm not trying to say, like, oh, Americans are dumb. It's like, no, absolutely not. Isn't it so funny and cute that there's this whole thing about the groundhog?
Right. And so your whole misdirection, you are setting it up by talking about how industrious we are and advanced and all these great inventions. And you're leading us right down that path. And boom, you hit us with the groundhog reality that, no, we know what we are. Not quite so fast.
You know, It's things like that. It's finding the things that you know are true. And I think that's a lot of comedy, right? Like, people say comedy is speaking truth to power. And, you know, that sometimes is a little bit self-aggrandizing of comedians. But I do think there is an element in comedy that is, like, take those things that you know are true, those opinions that you have that are real, you know?
Right.
Because if you feel strongly about them, there might be an element of realness to them.
And okay, so let me just see if I get this right. You look for things that are really important to you, that interest you in a really great way, and then you just write about it, and then it sounds to me like you then look for the funny in that story. Am I relaying that correctly? I mean, look for the small things,
kind of like that. I also have, like, a thing. I have a document on my phone that's called something like Thoughts That Are Eternally Funny or something like that. And it's just things that I think are funny. And I just, like, have it open. I'll just write, like, the word dodo birds.
Okay.
You know? That's funny. And I think the reason is, like, it's not necessarily that they're the punchline, but they are terms that carry expectations with them, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Dodo bird.
I'm curious here. What did you do with the dodo bird? Because I just wrote a dodo bird joke last week. So when you said that, that's like, wow, it's amazing. Hey, great minds think alike. But seriously, where did you go with that dodo bird joke?
I don't think I have a dodo bird joke right now, but
okay.
To me, what would be the funniest thing about the dodo is, you know, I see the word dodos, they went extinct. People say, oh, it went the way of the dodo, right?
Right, right, right.
People say that. That is a saying. So if I were to craft a joke, and I truly don't have one right now, so it's a little embarrassing, right. But it's like, okay, well, what is the way of the dodo? You know, maybe right. That dodo went to law school and like, yeah, I want to go the way of the dodo. That's like a really smart dodo, you know?
Interesting, interesting. So you just find things that are interesting. Now, so do you actually sit down to write one joke and then piece these jokes together, or are you just telling a story? I mean, how do you go about, is it one joke at a time, or is I'm going to tell this long story and make the story funny by pointing out different observations?
I think neither approach is wrong. You know, I think there are many comedians who do one-liners or just a collection of jokes. And that can be very good. And that also depends on the kind of show that you're doing. But if you're trying to do something like Lord Kilmartin did, or you just have a little bit of a longer set, I think anytime I have more than 7 minutes, I try to, like, you know, tie it up in a nice bow. Then we enter the area of, like, oh, we're storytellers, right? And we're not just up here telling jokes, which is something that you can do. I prefer to you know, connect the stories in some kind of way. So,
right.
You know, usually in my stand-up, I open with things like, you know, I'm Felipe. I'm an immigrant, which means I am diverse. I am Latino. And I am 30% more likely to get diabetes. And that is true. That is a statistical thing. And I'm, you know, playing with these expectations of, like, you know, me being proud of my heritage, which I am, but obviously on the stage you want to make the joke. And then I usually, and this is an act that I've been doing for a while, and I might change it up just because I like to keep things fresh and new. But if I have some time, I'll end up talking about another thing that really interests me, Spider-Man.
Hey, you live in New York City.
I live in New York City, and I like to talk about the Spider-Man, Miles Morales, who's the Latino Spider-Man who's in the animated movie. I really like the character. I'm a big comic book nerd, so I really liked it before the movie, and before the kind of boom of Miles Morales. But now I'm really happy that he got to be in a movie because more people know about him, and I'm like talking like, you know, we got Miles Morales. He's the first Latino Spider-Man. Do you guys know what that means? He is 5 times more likely to have high cholesterol. You know?
Right. Making fun of it again. So now you just brought up an interesting point. So you wrote the joke, and it's funny. So let's... What's more important to you, the delivery or the content? Because obviously right there, you just told that joke. You made me wait in anticipation for that punchline.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stalling going on. And then you delivered it. How do you interact? Or is it just both meld together?
I think they're totally hand in hand. Because, and you know, you can write and craft a really good joke, but the moment you get on stage, you have to figure out how you're going to say it, what your pacing is, what your timing is, because it's, you are doing performative art. If you're doing stand-up, you are performing. This isn't just writing. And I do a lot of just writing. You know, I write humor pieces and things like that. And writing, you know, we talk about amongst people who write jokes, there are written jokes and there are verbal jokes.
Okay.
And there are jokes that are funny when you write them down because the shape yes. of the words, you know, is similar to another word and you're doing some kind of wordplay or things like that.
Right, right.
But there are jokes that you have to perform and you have to say. And you know, when we're writing for the show as well, one of the big things that we do is every script we write, we read out loud before we submit it.
Okay.
Because these are things that are written to be performed and to be said out loud in a presentational right. kind of monologue manner, you know? So you do, wow. you do need to, they do go hand in hand to me. And unless you're writing something that you know is entirely going to be written, like not performed, I don't right. think I don't think you can dissociate them. Even when I'm writing humor pieces, I write a lot of them from like first person perspectives.
Okay.
Like I have written some that are on the internet, like my daily itinerary as a job stealing immigrant, you right. know, because that's an absurd thing that people say. So like that is also written in kind of a first person point of view that kind of implies a certain performance when you're writing it, even though right, right. it's only going to be written down and no one's going to probably ever perform it or read it live. You do write it in a voice that should be a little bit more active, at least if you're writing this kind of like first person monologue thing.
So you mentioned that how you go about writing a joke, you find something that interests you, and then you look for the funny in the material. Is there any other tips that you can give here? I mean, I'm not asking for obviously all 10 of your tricks, but just a couple other tips on if someone wants to write a joke and do a stand-up this Friday night at the mm-hmm. local comedy club, what else could they do to make a joke funny?
I think a lot of people confuse, and I know I said like find something that you feel strongly about, and I totally like stand by that. But also, I think a lot of people confuse opinion for okay. humor, you know, right. Because it's kind of the first step, right? You find something that you feel funny about, but then that you feel passionate about. But then some people stop at the, well, I said it loud and in an animated voice, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Right, right.
And that's yeah. not a joke, you know? That's just a loud opinion. So I think my other tip is do not be afraid to bathe in the waters of silly. You okay. know?
Now what do you mean by that?
I think this is something that I did a lot because I tried to write satire and it was, you know, sometimes you want your satire to be biting and sometimes right. you want it you need to like release the jaws a little bit and just let some of the joy come in, because otherwise it's not satire, you know. Right. Otherwise you're just angry. Yeah, right. And there's a lot of things that can make you angry these days.
Yeah, so true.
So I think there's an element of like, you know, I have some political opinions that some people might not share, but like I don't think that it's any secret when I say, like, well, I don't think that the president is very good at his job. And that right. can be said of any president, right? That is an opinion exactly. that can be said of any president.
But now, that also might be an opinion that both conservatives and Democrats agree with. go on.
Exactly. But, you know, sometimes this current president will say things that are... pardon my friend, batshit crazy.
Right, right, right.
And so I think dipping into the waters of silly is when you have someone who says things that are already absurd, like, you know, maybe try to inject bleach.
Okay.
That's insane. That is an insane statement, which makes it hard to joke about because the... You know, inject bleach is almost a joke that you would write, before, you know?
I got you. There's no need for a punchline. That is insane.
Exactly. So how do you satirize that? Well, him saying that in the position of power is irresponsible. That is something that is true. Any person of power saying something like giving medical advice that they don't have, that they don't like really have any experience about. Let's forget about the specifics and talk about the abstract there. That is absurd. That is wrong. And that is something that, you know, deserves being made fun of.
Right.
So,
right.
And it is angering. It is, to me, it is, my parents are both doctors. So, you know, I believe in medicine and things like that. So to me, it makes me angry. So how do I bathe in these waters of silly? It's like, wow, that is insane. You know, everyone knows you don't inject bleach. You eat the Tide Pods. Come on. You know,
you eat the Tide Pods, right.
you lose all the flavor and the chewiness and the texture. You know, that's the silly. Like, let's find the ridiculous thing. Let's find the absurd thing and let's enjoy that, because if we can't enjoy that, then we're stuck in the angry, you know? So, we're stuck in the opinion. And to tie it back to, like, because it doesn't have to be with just political jokes, you know, but it's, you have an opinion, you say it loudly, but if you don't bathe in the waters of silly, if you don't remember things that are silly, like dodo birds and, you know, the phrase, let's blow this popsicle sandwich, things that are just like silly things that we say, idiosyncrasies, then you're not really moving beyond the opinion phase.
I heard Seinfeld say something similar to that, where Seinfeld will even say, I'll say a word that's just fun to say, you know, and
yeah,
I'll make
exactly.
a joke because I think the word is fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's humor in repetition. There's humor in finding a word that is funny, you know, and saying it several times. Or finding, you know, there's Nick Kroll and John Mulaney have the wonderful show Oh Hello, based on their characters that they did for Kroll Show. And one of the things that they do is mispronounce words at random.
Okay.
You know, as those characters. And now they have a podcast, but because they mispronounce words at random, it's called the podcast. The podcast, because they pronounce the word podcast podcast, or they pronounce the word rat race the rat race, you know. And that's just
that
choice.
That is a hilarious thought.
It's just a thought. Grabbing a word and grabbing the expectation of how you say that, and never explaining it. There's no need to explain it. They just do that. As those characters just do that, and that's really funny, and it's finding a way to say a word that you think is funny, or shifting the way you say the word to make it funny, or constructing sentences wrong, you know, just for the sake of funny. You know, there's the running gag in 30 Rock where Liz Lemon finds, usually it's related to food because she loves to eat, and she just says, I want to go to there, you know?
Okay,
I think is actually something that her daughter, Tina Fey's daughter, said once, and she found it hilarious because it's a weird phrase construction, and so she just put it in her show, and it became a thing.
Hey, that's why people find Trump and George W. Bush so funny. Who knew that these guys were comedians? They butcher the English language all of the time. And so it is definitely, I get where you're going with that. And Seinfeld just loved to say salsa. Oh, he just said salsa all the time. I think he made a whole bit over the word salsa.
Salsa. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, have you ever, so let's say you're going to do an open mic night. You're going to create these run of jokes. What are you looking for as far as number of laughs? Is that something that you even care about? I mean, how long can you set up the laugh before you get to the laughing point? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think, particularly in New York, where the scene is pretty brutal,
Okay.
Relying on the laughs of the audience can be very hard because, particularly in open mics, is usually other comedians who are just waiting for their turn to go up.
Oh, that is brutal. That is brutal.
I think, you know, it's a subtle art, but I think you shouldn't really spend. I mean, if you're gonna spend a lot of time without laughs, you gotta build to it. You know, if you're gonna spend over a minute without any laughs or jokes,
right?
Even if it's just verbal tweaks to the way you're saying things, you know, like not necessarily a hard joke that you've built, but even if it's injecting your performance with something that people will find funny or that will give a reaction, I think that is important. That is a huge part of stand-up, at least, is to be able to find funny and find fun things to do within, like, even between punchlines, between stories.
So let's go ahead and just try this out, just for to experience this whole process. So what is the interesting, crazy story out there in the news right now that interests you? Any stories that interest you? I have several I can come up with, but I thought let's just do this little practice. Is there any story out there that's interesting right now?
Yeah, I saw that some monkeys this morning escaped a lab where they were testing COVID-19.
Okay.
And they escaped.
Is this a real story? Monkeys escaped a lab where they were testing for COVID-19. Okay, go on.
Mm-hmm. And they like, I think they captured them again, but that's not fun. But you know, right. these monkeys in India escaped, and they had coronavirus blood test samples. Like, they escaped with them.
Oh, okay. So the monkeys actually had COVID-19.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I haven't read the story. I just read the headline. But I think they had COVID, or they stole the samples that had COVID. Like, they just took them as they were leaving.
Okay, so you hear that story, then what do you do next? What are you saying to yourself? How can I make this funny?
Right, so I think, what does this make me think of? First of all, it is already a funny story, right? It's
right, exactly.
It made us giggle when we heard it. It made us think, is this real? Right, so there's an element to that I think is important to convey, that yes, this is real, this has happened. And I think when you're doing stand-up and you have the confidence of the audience, I think you can say just like, yeah, this is real. This actually happened.
Right. So there's some imagery there going on, right? There's some imagery. I'm imagining these like monkeys leaving some, you know, locked up facility, maybe with mask on. I don't know, carrying something under their arms. It's a hilarious thought to me.
Exactly. Exactly. And so you think, okay, well, where do we go from here? And it's, well, to me, I think monkeys escape lab. I think Planet of the Apes, you know?
Okay, right.
I think there's something going on here, you know? So I say, okay, well, the monkeys have escaped the lab. That is real. Although we should have all seen it coming, because this was the lab run by Dr. Zaius, you know?
Okay, right.
And
right.
So that's a quick, easy joke. Not necessarily a great joke, but it's a joke that's like, okay, I get it. We're expecting to say Dr. whatever, some kind of human scientist, but we say Dr. Yes. Zaius, who's an ape scientist. Oh, so he let them go, you know? So you find the story, you find the expectation, you say like, you know, this happened and it was the lab run by doctor, and then you drop the punchline, which subverts the expectation you expect. And you don't have to also, because I think this is something that people do a lot, is like, wow, the apes, the monkeys escaped, and people think this would be a joke. Like, this is just like Planet of the Apes.
Right, right, right.
That's not a joke. That's an observation. And it's a correct one, but it's not a joke. Right?
Well, I get it. It's not a joke, but at least to me, I find it funny that you are actually comparing a movie that was meant totally to be a farce Totally. And then you're saying, no, actually, it's happening here in real life. It could be happening, you know, they're escaping out there, running around, running amok.
Right. But I think it's the saying, like, this is just Planet of the Apes. This is just like Planet of the Apes is, to me, I think it's an observation that is funny. Right. And observations can be funny. And I think observations that are funny is a great breeding ground for jokes.
Okay.
You know? So you say, this is just like Planet of the Apes, can breed jokes like, well, you know, the lab person was Dr. Zaius. The person who ran the lab was Dr. Zaius. Or you can say something like, you know, the monkeys have escaped with the COVID-19 traces. And then you can say something like, I'm sorry, I never signed a release. Who cast me in this version of Planet of the Apes? You know?
Right, okay.
So you're building something with the expectation of Planet of the Apes, with the observation of Planet of the Apes, but you're building a little bit more of a story. You're creating, and that I think is what I mean by bathing in the waters of silly, is like, the observation is good, but when you commit to the observation, when you say, okay, if this is just like Planet of the Apes, what is the most absurd, funniest version of the reality of the world where we live in, where this is real, right? And this is something that people say in improv a lot, is if this is true, what else is true, right?
Right.
So
right.
If this is just like Planet of the Apes, then what else is true, right?
Right.
So in the release...
How do you follow up on that?
Well, in the release joke is like, okay, so this is just like Planet of the Apes. That's like you go from A being the monkeys, right? The true story that the monkeys escaped. B is this is just like Planet of the Apes. C is where your joke is. If you go one step beyond and say like, okay, well, if this is just like Planet of the Apes, then reality is a movie, and I'm not getting paid for it, you know?
Right.
And that's your joke. Or C is like, okay, if this is just like Planet of the Apes, who was running this lab? Well, it was Dr. Zaius, you know? Or things like that. And I think it's finding that A to C where you're really going to find that silliness and that crazy world that makes the joke richer, that makes the joke more than the funny observation and makes it like, oh yeah, that's the silliest version of the world where we could be in.
Interesting. Well, Felipe, thank you so much for coming on. So I do want to just throw a couple more thoughts by you before I let you go. One is just kind of a curiosity thing that I have. I've been talking to various comedians out there, people who are funny, and I'm just curious about this one aspect. Does your girlfriend think you are funny?
Well, she's my fiance.
Okay. Congratulations. Does she think you're funny? Because here's where I'm going with this. I was talking to a guy who's a personal friend of Kevin Hart's recently, and he said, no, even Kevin Hart's wife does not think he is funny. No comedian's spouse actually thinks they are funny. I'm just wondering, I guess if you're in the fiance stage, maybe she still does. I don't know.
My fiance is also a comedian and also a writer.
Okay.
Right. I think we both think each other are hilarious. I think enjoy each other's sense of humor, particularly because they're very different, you know? So I think even if sometimes the person you live with all the time, particularly in these days where you're stuck in the same apartment in New York all the time, even if you you're dealing with them all the time, even if you don't find a joke particularly funny to you, I think because we're both writers and comedians, it is kind of like, oh, I see the humor in this. I totally get this. And I think that's funny, you know? And also, this is a thing that comedians do that happens within comedians. It's you learn to find the things that are objectively funny, even if you don't find them subjectively super funny.
Okay.
You know, like when you're in a writer's room, sometimes you'll be with someone and someone will pitch a joke Oftentimes it's you, and everyone is like, oh yeah, that's funny. But no one laughs, you know? Everyone's
right.
just like, oh yeah, yeah. But
that has to be a different world for you.
Yeah.
So if you're a professional writer, you're going, oh, I see how that worked. I see how, you know, parts A worked with part, and how all the moving parts worked. Good job. And no one laughs. It's just a clinical observation.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that happens. That happens a lot. You know, you say a joke, you crafted it and everything, and people are like, uh-huh, yeah, yeah, that's funny. But you haven't gotten to those big laughs yet. And then oftentimes you'll just say something and people will crack up. And, you know, you learn to find the objectively funny versus the subjectively funny. And that doesn't necessarily mean that what you don't find subjectively funny isn't funny. You know, it just means that it's an opinion. And also there's a skill. There's some writers who are just like incredibly good and skilled who get you those big laughs every time. But it's, you know, it's a skill. You got to work on it every day.
You write jokes every day. And so how long should a person write? Let's say they want to be a stand-up comedian. I think Jerry Seinfeld even talked about how he has this don't break the chain where every single day he would at least write one joke and then he'd make it X. So it'd be a chain on his calendar. And his thought was, I'm not going to break the chain every single day I'm going to write. How long should one write jokes every day if you want to be a stand-up comedian?
I wouldn't say a number. I don't think that's the thing. I think the idea of writing every day is the key to any kind of writing, whether it's short stories, poetry, jokes, stand-up, whatever it is, you have to write every day. And you don't have to write comedy every day. I don't think that that's necessarily true. I think you just have to write. Sit down and write every day. But it can be anything from a joke that you're crafting on the notes app on your computer, to a whole monologue that you write on your notebook, to a tweet, you know?
Right.
I think that it can be any of those things, as long as you're trying to do something funny. And it can be hard, you know. I've written tweets that I'm like, this is hilarious, and then I put them and I'm like, you know, 5 likes, and I'm like, oh well, screw you guys, you
know. Exactly. It becomes personal.
Yeah, I know over 2,000 of you follow me, what the hell, you know.
right. Oh my goodness.
But it happens, and I think it's just like a lot of people get paralyzed by the fear of rejection, the fear of starting, and you gotta start, you gotta do it, you gotta sit down and write the thing and put it out there. And, you know, most times it's not going to be great, because it just isn't, you know. I wake up early every morning to write jokes. And I think every morning I write 15 jokes. And if when I go to a pitch meeting, I pitch 5 of those, that's a good day.
Okay.
You know?
Really?
Like,
okay.
5 is a good day. You know?
Interesting. You write 15, you say 1-5 to get to 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, some of them I can revisit. Like, some of them, because, you know, you're writing for deadlines and you're writing for meetings and stuff like that. But, you know, some of them I write them and I'm like, I know there's a funny idea here, I just don't have the time to craft it right now. And then maybe you're writing with someone else and you're like, hey, I have this thought, what do you think? And then you craft a joke together. You know, things like that. But you know,
I like getting other people's opinion on matters. I wrote a joke the other day and I was like, it's just missing something. So I sent it to your future father-in-law, Carrie, say, hey, what can you do with this? So he gave me the punchline right back. I thought, yep, that's going to work. So sometimes groupthink does help a little bit when you're writing.
Yeah, exactly. I think, collaboration is key. Obviously stand-up is a very lonely art form. But being able to share your what you're writing with people whose judgment you trust, who don't necessarily have to be funny. You know, they don't have to be comedians. They just have to be people whose judgment you trust and opinions you trust. That really helps. That's, I think, one of the keys to writing good jokes is, like, I know there's something here. What do you think? You know?
Right. Oh, I know it's, you feel it, you sense it. It's hilarious. And it's just not formulating correctly.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. I'm not female, but maybe it's like birthing a baby. I don't know. You keep working. Eventually it's going to come out. Exactly. Now, I don't want to get into too many personal stories, but I probably will. But have you ever bombed?
Yeah. Yeah, all the time. Man. It happens.
Let's play a one-up, all right? I bet you my bomb is worse than your bomb. What do you have a bomb in mind?
Let's see. I mean...
See, you don't. You haven't bombed. You're a professional.
No. I was trying to pick between two. You know?
Oh, okay, you're trying to pick between how many of them?
Like, which one's the worst? My first time I moved to after I moved to New York, you know, I was living in Boston because I was going to grad school there, and I'd done some shows there, and they'd gone okay, you know. And I think I was really new to the country and really new to you know, U.S. culture, because I had been living, even though I knew it from movies and everything, I'd been living in grad school mode, which is its own kind of thing. And then I got on an open mic thing at The Stand, which is a club here in the Upper West Side, and I was like, I have the perfect Adam and Eve joke.
Okay, all right.
I got it, and it's gonna be so funny. And I got on stage, and it was, I think I had written like a whole 5-minute bit on this frigging Adam and Eve thing. And I remember when I was thinking about it, I was walking around Boston one of my last days. You know, I went to Boston University for grad school, and that their campus is right off the Charles. And so what I did was like, I walked the banks of the Charles, and then I went across the river into Cambridge, and I was right in MIT.
Okay.
And I then, you know, I kind of like did this big goodbye Boston walk, and I was thinking about this bit, and I was like, this is going to be great. And I told it, and I think I was 3.5 minutes in, and I realized no one had laughed at anything I had said.
Right.
And I was like, how have these 5 minutes not been over?
I
stopped midway and said like, okay, well, that's all I had, and like put the microphone back, grabbed my backpack and left, and thanked the gods that it was like a Wednesday at 5 p.m. where like there wasn't really anyone there, and just left. And I didn't return to that club until like way later.
Wow.
Like someone invited me to an event, but I don't think I've ever performed at that place again. I think my memories are just
too painful
yes, to go back there.
Now, let me see if I can top that one here. So I do this bit, you know, for lawyers. I do my presentations, and I'm comedian of law, so it's supposed to be funny, right? Mm-hmm. And so I got a reputation. I got invited by this one major international law firm to come do my bit for their all-firm conference. And so it's there at the Midland Theater. Now, you're not from Kansas City, but the Midland Theater is it. I mean, that is where all the big wigs come. Jerry Seinfeld was there the following week doing his bit. So this is where you do all, it's your, you know, balconies where your, you know, all your fancy rich people will be sitting on those balconies watching. It's an incredible venue. All right. So they invited me to come, and I thought, you know what? This is the biggest moment in my life, the biggest opportunity. Why not write all new material for this this one gig, which I have learned, I've since learned, that's not a good idea. If you were invited, there's a reason why they invited you, right? They liked your material. Don't come up with new stuff for your biggest moment in your entire life. Go with your tried and true. So I'm telling you, and then the setup was horrible. Would you ever do a setup like this? They told me, look, Joel, this is going to be a bunch of lawyers. They all have busy things. They have clients to deal with. They're not going to be paying attention. They're going to be meandering around. Just go with what you got, and it'll be okay.
So I hate that.
I'm out there in front of 1,000 attorneys, all right? No one's paying attention. It's just me up on this grand stage bombing like you would not believe. I got so sweaty, the mic fell off my head twice. So I had to bend down, pick up the microphone, put it back on, crickets everywhere. And I thought, I'm quitting. I am leaving this profession. But yeah, that was 5 years ago now. I have now since hopefully recovered from that event. I learned my lessons, but yeah, I have, I think I bombed gloriously that day. But you know my one takeaway from that story is?
What is it?
This is my takeaway. Jerry Seinfeld was there the next week on the exact same stage. So on my resume, I opened for Jerry Seinfeld. That's what I tell people. It might have been a week earlier, but hey, I was there ahead of time, so I opened for Jerry Seinfeld. But nonetheless, hey, thank you so much for coming on today. I do appreciate it. But can you tell our listeners how they can follow you? I have some that are from New York City. I mean, how can one follow Felipe?
You can follow me on Twitter. My at is Felipe T. Medina with two A's because someone took Felipe T. Medina and they have like 10 followers and they haven't tweeted since like 2013 and they just have that username and I'm so mad.
Right.
So it's Felipe T. Medina with two A's at the end. So Felipe T. Medina. That's my Twitter. I try to write jokes there every day. And if I don't write jokes, I'm normally mad at something that's happening.
right.
So they can follow me there and they can watch the show. We work really hard every day. We were on hiatus this week, but we're back on Monday. And we work really hard to make a funny, entertaining show for everyone in these very dark and unsettling times.
And now, you say you're back on Monday. I just want to make sure I understand that. Are you guys actually going to be together with a live audience? I don't know how things are going down there in New York City.
Oh, no. We're doing... so we were on hiatus for a little bit, but we've been, you know... The host is performing from his house, and we are all... we're all ready. We're not at the theater.
Okay, I got because you. It's, right, but you're it's back on new, fresh material on Monday.
Yeah. And we've been doing shows like this since the beginning, the mid-March. So now this is kind of like our first break since the quarantine started, and now we're back. We're, you know... revitalized and geared up for more fun shows. So
I'm excited to hear it. I'm excited to watch. And thank you so much for coming on today. I really do appreciate it. Hope I can have you on in the future.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This was delightful, and hope I was helpful and not confusing. I know sometimes I ramble, but but hope this was very fun.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star review. We need your love to help us continuing highlighting the funnier side of the law. I want to give a special shout out to our Vice President of Operations, Wendy Oster, without whom this entire operation would be a mess. Our marketing team, Redbird Solutions, and Leanne Holmberg for spreading the good word about us. Sean Wynn and 15.5 Features for making me sound way better than I actually do. And Ryan Kuhn and Paul Kuhn of Triplicity Marketing for our technical and computer support.